It's time for Message in the Bottle. Eric Mann of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company joining us. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's everybody out there in Radioland / the WKIT studios?
We are we're grooving. We're doing what we do. How about you?
Not bad. It's been sort of a long day already. Interesting day. As a member of the Downtown Bangor Partnership, I started off the day with a Zoom meeting there, which quickly transferred to the greater meeting with some of our city officials, talking about the gradual reopening of Bangor itself, which is an interesting topic. A lot of opinions, but a lot of good things came out of that, which I'm happy to say to the greater populace. So Bangor Wine continues to truck along as we do. So, yeah, not bad, all things considered.
Well, we're very glad to hear that. So what did you learn? Anything that you can share from your plethora of meetings today?
I'm happy to share it because it's kind of interesting. And I'm sure Bethy and whomever her guest is tomorrow is going to share a little more of this, but there's a lot of talk about very European style, although in point of fact, a New World European city was referenced, Montreal in particular, about how it's just common practice to shut down parts of traffic thoroughfare for restaurants to have outdoor seating. And so that was one of the interesting things that has come about, is that it sounds like there's going to be a lot more pedestrian area / seating downtown for restaurants and perhaps retailers as well. And I don't exactly know what's going to come of that, but I think Bangor, how it's set up, it could handle some of that. So, you know, especially if we're not going to be benefiting from as many tourist dollars necessarily this summer, it would be good to see, the locals get a chance to utilize their city as a in sort of a novel way, right?
Well, yeah, and I've read about a number of cities around the country that are going forward with that plan, or at least have something similar in the works, that you block off some streets and have it be much more user friendly for the restaurants.
Yeah, and I think it's not just for restaurants. I mean, obviously, I don't feel like taking my entire inventory of bottles out onto the street for a host of reasons. But the fact that, you know, they're talking about retailers as well, and really, you know, trying to encourage an open air market sort of feel for the foreseeable future. I mean, you know, thank goodness we're now in a season where we can, even here in Maine, you know, talk about this sort of concept. But if it's even halfway true, I'm all for it. You know, it'd be really, I mean, of course, parking is never good, right? So we just sort of have to throw that asterisk out the window and accept, you know, the current reality, which is that we have a city that can do it. We have the people willing to do it. We have the city officials willing to let them do it. So, so that's the biggest takeaway I had from today. And also that there's a real, you know, there's a real groundswell wanting to be as accessible as possible to the general populace while still remaining as safe as possible, which is so great to hear. I mean, there's no right answer, but the right answer is, you know, a good middle ground between, frankly, not losing your entire life savings and home and everything and not dying. So,
yeah, and that's what we were talking about that earlier. There is a middle ground there in that Venn diagram that includes the ability for businesses to succeed, to have commerce, and to do it in a safe way that protects people in a maximum way.
I think so. And I hope so, because I'll be honest with everybody out there. I mean, I've been very blessed. I did not have to stop business, right? I had to stop business as usual, but I did not have to stop business. And I have a lot of friends and a lot of other businesses, and I've, while still remaining firmly in the the camp of science is the best, I really am starting to feel for a lot of people who are scared. And I'm glad that at least our city officials and our state government as well are really trying to do the best they can and put forth plans that I know that they're not as definite as some people want. They're not as definite as I want, but given the fact that testing, and things like this, and obviously no vaccine, it's I was as encouraged today as I've been in a long time, which is great to hear.
Well, that's very good.
For me, at least.
Well, I'm glad to hear that as well. That gives me some optimism.
Well, yeah, I think we all need the optimism, right? Because otherwise, dire cynicism will take hold, and that was all too easy before this.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So hey, let's talk wine. I want to talk a little bit about what we're doing at the store, and then a little bit about our topic for today. As everybody remembers, we're sort of delving into the world of wine, and talking this month about where wine comes from and how it's all sort of codified, right? So the segment of I refer to as hearty Burgundy, right? And I talk about hearty Burgundy. I talked about it. Actually, I did this virtual Mother's Day tasting, which went very, very well, in which we did a champagne substitute and got to the opportunity to talk about how, the wine that we substituted was made in the same way as champagne but couldn't be called champagne. And so this is my opportunity to talk about Burgundy, which is Burgundy is the single most important wine region in the world. And I say that not being Burgundian and not because I was educated and mentored by a Burgundian, but because Burgundy was the first place that decided to codify things, like I was just saying, right? Like, a lot of other places had some ideas and traditions, but Burgundy, and specifically the Cistercian monks, and those of you who have read history specifically about the church understand that an awful lot of property was willed to the church, especially, or taken by the church. I mean, if you were thrown out of the church, they would take your property because the separation of church and state wasn't so much a thing. And, of course, a lot of people who died childless, their property went to the church. A lot of people just willed property to the church. And so, especially these cloistered orders really came into a wealth of very good property. And it was these Cistercian monks around 1000 A.D., and then a little later, the Benedictines especially, and then the Cistercians started to keep records about different agricultural results that they had from different subplots of the land that they owned. They started to say, we planted this here, and it didn't work, but we planted the same thing here, and it worked fabulously. And over the years, they started to, log weather patterns and this and the other thing. And they actually, at that very time, way back in the day, created Burgundy's first walled-off vineyard, which is called Clos de Vougeot. It's still there. And it was, they said, this plot right here is, I'm sure they said it was blessed by God, because let's be honest, but it was, right? They figured out this place gets Mother Nature, God, Vishnu, whoever. I don't know who you pray to, but this place gets the right amount of sunlight and the right amount of rain and the right amount of whatever to grow grapes every year with the same sort of ripeness and the same qualities. And the vintages, it's basically like the vintage always matters, but the vintage doesn't so much matter here as much as it matters over there, because here it's always good. And they took that seriously. And you can see, even as early as the mid-1800s, there were vineyards classified in books saying, this vineyard and this vineyard, this vineyard. That's not to say that it wasn't officially recognized. The official I can't even speak anymore. My children are like running around my world right now. but recognition, that's the right word, of the appellation system wasn't recognized formally until 1936. But it was almost 100 years earlier that things really started to appear in books, and a couple hundred years before that, people were starting to put them in historical record. So Burgundy, you know, my old boss, Laurent, was he's from Burgundy. And he would always say, you know, Burgundians invented this, Burgundians invented that. You know, he claimed that Burgundians invented eyeglasses, which I'm pretty sure isn't true, and this and that and the other thing. But this is one thing they really, really, really can lay claim to, is that they invented the idea of appellations. It exists to this day, and it's an incredibly important thing that this particular product came from this particular area for all sorts of reasons, right? Not just orientation of the, you know, vineyard, but also general practices and other things. Yeah, if you knew that a particular product came from, you know, the beautiful, pristine woods of Maine versus, you know, some inner city garden, you might think twice about one versus the other, and that has to do with, you know, common sense, but sometimes common sense doesn't rule. Witness everything we're witnessing right
yes,
now.
Yes.
So, may I get a time check?
About there. Two left.
Very good. By the way, I should mention, at this hour, I can't be sipping on wine. It's just too heavy. But I'm having a Gagan's Brother oatmeal stout, a dad's
Ooh,
oatmeal stout.
I love that.
My goodness, it's hitting the spot right now. So props to Gagan's. By the way, they just canned, I believe it was this, and also the Higgins Red.
Yeah, that's very good, too.
A shout-out to my friend Brian Sturgeon, who works there, who brought me a couple samples freshly canned. They're delightful, so go on out to your local provider and get some. I just want to mention with my time left, obviously we're not doing in-store events, but I am working with my friend Bill Bishop at Steel Wine. Ed Steel is the guy who made Kendall Jackson Chardonnay famous, and he then took his millions and went off and made really great wines. So Bill Bishop is his main fly fishing guy who follows the dead, who happens to work for him there in California. Who's still in California, but he wants to be in Maine again, but things. So we're going to be doing some virtual tastings of the Steel wines. We're going to put together a really nice package of the wines that people can buy and then do online tastings with myself and Bill and perhaps some guest stars, since he's out there. Please stay tuned for that. I'm very excited about that and possibly some other virtual tastings as well. We are working on getting the store reopened with, you know, certain limits, masks. I've ordered some masks today, some sanitizer, all sorts of things, so that we can make it work when we finally decide to make it work. And I guess my last thing I just want to say is please continue to call Facebook, contact us on BangalWineAndCheese.com, and thank you to all of you for your support and understanding, because it's a crazy time to do hand-sell retail via phone and messenger. But y'all are being great, so thank you. And thank you to Rich and Carrie for continuing to broadcast my foolish voice every week.
Highlight of our week, you know that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Eric. Be well, we'll check in again next Tuesday.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, with Message in the Bottles.